once killed three men in a bar.
A pencil. I know, I've heard the story, sir.
Fucking pencil! Who the f can do that? Well, I can assure you that the stories you hear about these men, if nothing else, has been watered down.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon, sponsored by Boosted and DoorDash. I'm Victor Manis, along with Sunny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. I'd like to remind you the Subbeacon is available on iTunes and Google Play. Just look at our podcast and search for Subbeacon. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, what is going on?
That was the best episode of the Subbeacon we've had in months.
What? Just the what
the other day?
Of last week's?
No! The one without me. The Game of Thrones micro episode was sensational. I did not know what was happening until it had already been taped and in the can. And Sonny was like, are you going to be offended? And I was like, no, are you kidding? You guys talking about Game of Thrones? Because here's the thing. I do not watch Game of Thrones, but that's not really a choice. I wish... I'm like a 14-year-old boy pressed up against the window at a strip club, like dying to see what's going on inside. It looks so cool. Oh, my God, if I could just get a peek. And so any little tidbits about the Game of Thrones experience that I could get, beginning with Matt Continenti's seminal essay about Game of Thrones in the Claremont Review of Books. I go nuts for it, and the episode was great. I was really interested in what happened to the Dothrakis. I was a little sad Matt didn't have the Johnny Walker White Walker.
You know, he's
at 9:23 in the morning.
That I don't know why.
Pretty awesome.
That's like it's so unbeacon of him. You know,
can
really,
you,
it's
can is it okay to stick. What is Johnny Walker? Is it scotch? Is it bourbon?
Johnny Walker is a blended scotch.
Okay.
Is it
okay to put scotch in the freezer
Well, it is. The instructions for drinking gauche? It is to put it in the freezer.
If you were to put any other scotch in the freezer, would people say, oh, yeah, no, that's totally cool?
Right. What they want is the effect of it going from sub-zero to room temperature, and as you drink it along the way, then all these new... you know, nuances, flavors, and aromas just reveal themselves.
Oh. So if you had a Macallan 50, would you put your Macallan 50 in the freezer so that you could get all the nuances revealed?
Well, the problem for me with that was, of course, it's like, you know, if you drink it over the span of, you know, 10 minutes, but usually for me, 10 seconds, it's gone. So I don't know what the nuances are. Sonny, thoughts on that? You have scotch thoughts? No, you don't have anything. I thought it was good. I thought it was fine. It's a good deal, too. It's like $36. So that's very decent.
I thought you were talking about the show again.
Oh, yeah.
The show was more than fun. It was great. It was
show. The funny thing is that it lasted, again, the scotch, it lasts longer than the White Walkers did, which was very, very brief.
Did Cersei Lannister hang in? Because from my pressed up against the glass of the strip club, Cersei Lannister was my favorite character simply because of the gif where she says,
right.
I choose violence.
Right. Yes.
I just thought, that's awesome.
Yeah, in the end, she did not choose enough violence, which is the one of the morals of the show.
I read the first book. I loved her in the first book.
A Song of Fire and Ice.
Yeah, and I thought that she really was the true hero of the first book was Cersei.
Mm-hmm. Now, she gets crushed to death.
Yeah, she dies.
Oh, she does. By
rocks,
who?
A giant boulder.
Tyrion.
The dragon. She's in that, everything
she's in
comes
the,
down.
She's in the
oh,
crypts.
Danny. Danny kills her?
Basically, the dragon.
Wow.
You know, that super fire that, you know, blows away rock and stone.
Now, Khal Drogo, is he dead too?
Yes, he's been he's been dead since the first
season. But you know what?
What about the Boy King? The Cersei's kid.
He was poisoned.
That my other favorite Joffrey. Game of Thrones gif is Cersei saying to him, anyone who isn't us is an enemy. Because these two things, I choose violence and anyone who isn't us is an enemy, are essentially words to live
it's
by.
It's the story of your life.
It's the last,
it's your philosophy.
It's the last house words.
Yes, yes. That's right. House of Last. House of Last. Go. Well, I'm glad you liked it.
It was great. It was great. How are you boys?
I'm doing fine. Sunny.
Talk can you tell me. Us something personal about your life? Because it's been months since any of us have heard anything that you've been doing. How is
this
the favela?
Dudes chatting.
We had the story about the diapers.
Oh, that's true. Really
that was actually really, that was the best thing I've done on the show in like 3 years.
That killed, actually.
That was your battle of the bulge.
That was it. I actually thought about just leaving the episode after that was done. Just like George Costanza. I'm out.
Drop the headphones.
Yes.
And leave.
Victoria, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. But, you know, before we started taping, we were talking about Uber.
Yes.
Oh. And Sonny, your deep question was, how is this company not making any money? And Jonathan, your insight was?
Was that they make a lot of money, but they spend a lot of money.
Mm. Yeah. I still don't quite understand what they're spending money on, but I guess it's all the R&D for the self-driving cars. And
well, also, the executives who work at Uber do it for free.
Oh, yeah.
So they're not paying Travis. Yeah. Travis doesn't, you know, get paid in
Is he still there?
He wanted to ring the bell, and they wouldn't let him. The new lady CEO was like, uh-uh. And you know what? As it turns out, would have been better for Uber if they'd let Travis ring the bell, and then he could have hung the big IPO flop on him.
Too bad.
Now, how does
I
that
love
work?
Uber dying. I love Uber dying so much, I can't even tell you.
A question, though, really quick, to go back about the bell. Is it a button now? You just press a button?
Or I don't know. I don't get to go to fancy stock market openings.
Wait, every day they pick somebody to do it.
So wait, why do you hate Uber? I know why you. I know you hate most things.
Yeah, that's why I just assumed.
Why do you hate Uber specifically?
Uber is oppressing the working class, and it is taking a perfectly functional Pareto optimized system, which we call taxis. Yes.
That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. But go on.
And it is providing a marginal utility to consumers, very marginal utility, and then sucking away all sorts of money from the workers and concentrating in the hands of a handful of tech bros.
Here's the problem.
How is that helpful to anyone?
Here's the problem with this is that taxis sucked. Taxis in D.C., specifically, which is where I've spent most of my time, a lot of them were dirty. Taxis here sucked. They you could not get one to come when you called. You could not time it right. It was expensive. The drivers were all dicks. I remember in DC the zone system.
I don't want to
get into a whole thing about the zone system, but the zone
system,
the zone system was this ridiculous mishmash of random shapes, not like squares or whatever, just like the ridiculous gerrymandered shapes that the taxi cab drivers and the taxi cab commission put together. And if you went from one zone to another zone, you had to count all of the zones.
You're not paying by the minute.
It was like some sort of black magic that they used to screw people. And anything that Uber can do to break the spirit and the will of the DC taxi cab drivers, I'm in favor of. Because those people were the worst, and I'm glad that they're all going out of business. New York City cab drivers, much better, a much better system, but it's still woefully inefficient, and frankly, I think the whole taxicab medallion system is vaguely evil.
It's
in
corrupt,
the same way that you think,
but
that
it is not. It is corrupt, but it is not terribly inefficient.
Let me say this also. Do you remember when they did a study in New York? I like New York taxi cabs too. They're fun. They're exciting and
awful. They're awful.
But
they
did
smell.
They did.
They have those TVs.
Smell. They have the TVs
that never shut up.
But they also have. They did a test of like how dirty is the New York cab, and they did. They wiped JVL. You would have loved this one. They wiped the residue and all the different things they found. As they wiped handles and
what
seats.
Are you, I'm sorry. That is true of every literally every single thing got, in New York. Yeah. If I you got, step yeah, inside the borough of Manhattan,
it really,
there is nothing you can touch that doesn't happen.
That's why I always stay at the St. Regis. But when they found, like all, they give a list of all the things they found. I just have one word for you. Juices.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Fluid. But some of them I'm
Capri
like,
Sun?
Some of them I'm like, oh, maybe I will
moist?
Sit there now.
Yeah, is it moist?
Some of them I'm like, wait, let me sit on that spot.
Anyway, Vic, you had a question
for
me.
Oh, right? Yes. I did, which is because when I had recently gotten used an Uber and the option came up for.
Oh, you were using Uber Black.
Well, yes,
right.
Because I was with two other colleagues, one of whom is very pregnant.
And you couldn't fit in a normal Uber?
One of whom was very pregnant. And so I said, you know, there was an option for your air climate control. I said, yes, keep it cool for her. She's about to have a baby in a couple of weeks. And then, but then the other option is a conversation, yes or no.
With the driver.
With the driver. I opted for no option. I said no.
No preference.
No preference.
Do you choose this after you see who the driver is?
No. So,
or do you have to choose it before?
You can choose it in the middle of it, like you're listening to the guy, like just in Spinal Tap with Bruno Kirby, and then the window goes up because they don't want to listen to him talking about the Rat Pack. Sonny, what did you do?
I have not used. See, here's my problem with this option. Right, the option that they give you is to opt out of conversation. Right.
You think you should have to opt in.
I think
the default should be no conversation.
You should have to opt in. Because if you opt out of the conversation, then the driver's like, oh, this guy is real uppity. He thinks he's so full of himself. He doesn't want to talk to the little Uber driver. And it's not that I'm uppity. It's just that I hate people.
Yeah, that could affect your rating. Imagine
and
if it affects your rating.
And it could affect
this guy's
your rating.
A dick. I'm gonna,
what if he gives me fewer stars on my user rating because I say I don't want to talk to him, and I never want to talk to any. I don't want to talk to you guys, frankly, most of the time. And
this
I do
hour
this
is enough.
Week.
It's true.
This is I like.
Do
I,
you know who doesn't rate you?
Who
the f-ing taxi drivers?
Well, here's the problem.
The taxi drivers don't rate anybody. They just pick you up and drive you to your spot
you
and
know
drop
what,
you.
You know
off.
What they do instead of rating people? They just do a shitty job. So I'll take the rating. I'll take the rating.
You know what? I was hoping there was an option of conversation. Yes, please talk to me because I want you to be my friend. That's the option I choose. Please, let's be friends.
Because I want you to vote for me for class president.
Victorino, I am surprised that you did not want conversation because you are sometimes the type of guy who talks to everybody.
It is,
you get your
it is.
Shoes
you are
shined.
You are
your hair
chatty,
I
chatty get my, cat.
You're in line with the Pokeball.
I'm friends with the shoeshine guy, and the Pokeball guy is a little intimidating. But no, it's true, but it does depend.
So
on
you
what
don't
want
to do it? You just feel
don't
compelled to have conversation
depends.
With people?
Depends on the vibe. There was one guy, this is really funny, Uber driver. I get in, he turns to me, and he says, and I'm with other people, and he goes, I know you. And I said, what are you talking about? And he goes, you used to go to the Mayflower. And the Uber driver was a former bartender at the Mayflower bar. And he remembered us from back. Remember, we used to go there all the time.
Who's the we in
town
that
and
sentence?
Country.
Sorry.
Town
who's
country.
The we in that sentence?
You should have been looking this way when you said that.
I'm sorry. Remember, Sonny, we used to go to that bar all the time?
When we all worked in the same
Jack
office?
Jack Quinn.
They made great martinis there.
I know. Well, then we had a wonderful conversation.
Fishbowl-sized martinis.
Yes. I'm sorry. while you were working, JVL, I would just go across to Sales Street, have a quick drink. And anyway, so that was, and I had a lovely conversation with them. But other people, if they want to talk about politics or something, I don't want to talk about politics. So, you know, it depends. And sometimes
I don't want to talk to anybody about anything. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't want to talk to a, I'm sorry, I don't want to talk to a stranger about anything. I just don't. Mm-hmm. And it's, usually they're pretty good about not talking. They're good at reading vibes, I think, at Uber. Especially since they added the tip function. Now that I can tip them, much better. Much better,
like,
no time.
I always thought the tip was built into the fee.
No, well, that's how it used to be. And they started, there was like an underground market in cash tipping. Like Uber drivers started expecting cash tips.
Oh
because,
my gosh, that defeats the whole purpose.
Right, and it defeats the whole purpose. So Uber started adding a tip function that would allow you to tip them without that being taken out of the total.
You are still better off in a taxi.
No, you're not. You're not better off
you're
in
gonna
a taxi.
You're going to wind up, believe me, 3 years from now, Uber and taxis will totally converge and the experience of Uber will be no different than the experience of a taxi.
You know
except
what?
You do
you know
it with
what?
Your phone
you know
instead
what?
Of like raising your hand
and you know what?
IRL in the street.
And you know what that is? That is the market bringing the taxis to heel. That is the market breaking their will and making them do things the right way. Three cheers for the market.
But it won't be that the taxis get better. It's just that Uber will get worse. This is like Uber is already doing all these things you don't like. They're letting them rate you. They're now demanding cash tips. And like 3 years from now, the quality.
You should like the cash tips because that's the people. That's the people getting more money.
You know, I don't like. I don't like tips.
You don't like tipping. You think tipping. Is
oh, you'd like to go European style, which is rounded up
very
or built into.
I am very uncomfortable with the entire idea of tipping. Because once you have tipping in one sector, it is not obvious to me why it doesn't apply to every sector. So why is it that in a restaurant you tip your server? Why is it that when you get your hair cut, you tip your barber?
That's exactly right. And you know what else? I saw, just yesterday, I picked up clothes from the cleaners and there was a tip jar.
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. And so
tip creep is real and it's bad. When I worked at McDonald's,
what is the logical dividing line between a sector where you tip and where you don't tip?
When you worked at McDonald's.
So when I worked at McDonald's, I actually put a tip cup out as a joke one time. I was like, and my manager saw it and pulled me out of the window and was like, was like, what are you doing? That's like the worst thing you can do. That, you know. And the difference between somebody who is working as a waiter in a restaurant and somebody who is working as a fast food counter, there's a big skill difference between somebody who's just like putting the food together, throwing it out the window, and somebody who is there to like provide a dining experience, right? Mm-hmm. There are other financial considerations, which is that people who work at jobs where tipping is a part of their income earn a lower hourly wage. The tipped wage is lower than the regular wage. So, you know, if you go into a diner or something, the person who is serving you is making $2.13 an hour, or whatever the tipped wage is. At a McDonald's, they're making $8 an hour.
But what it's about different. People who employ cleaning services?
What about them?
So I believe you are expected to tip.
I do.
Your cleaners.
I do. We have cleaners who they came just today. I tip them. Yeah.
Dry cleaning.
Dry cleaning? Why would you tip the dry cleaner? You're just dropping the clothes off.
What I'm saying is,
it's not obvious to you.
Yes, but there are places where, yeah, dry cleaners where they ask for tips. Like at Starbucks, all the coffee shops, they now ask for tips. This is everywhere.
I just get a coffee.
Do they do the thing where they turn around the flat screen, the little iPad, you have to press?
Well, this is the great thing about Starbucks. Starbucks does not do this. It's one of the reasons I actually prefer Starbucks to other coffee shops, because instead of getting like the flipped around screen where it's like, do you want to add 15%? No, I don't want to add 20% for you to put the coffee out of the
thing. In fact, you know, we get incensed by this, but you know, our friend Dan, he was just talking about this, and he hates that, but he has the exact opposite reaction. He gets so flustered, he immediately has to go for 25%.
I have to say,
that's terrible pressure.
My dream is that I want to eliminate all tipping, and then just in every sector where tipping is economically important to the workers, just raise the prices. Because, it makes me uncomfortable, because you wind up in places where, like, okay, I'm sorry. 3 years ago, nobody tipped in this sector, and now people are expecting tips. Why isn't it everywhere?
What I like...
I have written a piece for Commentary. Do I get readers sending... Actually, I have had readers send me tips.
What?
No, but it's a weird thing. Like, it's a... You know,
when
it's
we
like,
start
hey,
when we start
so
our
much.
Patreon after the free beacon closes down, you know, feel free to send us tips, folks.
I literally had somebody after a casual I wrote for the Weekly Standard send me a check. And they just said, I just, that thing was so funny, and I got so much enjoyment out of it.
Give you money?
That I just, it was like $35. She was like, go buy yourself a cup of coffee or something. I just loved it so much. And I was like, thank you.
That's very nice.
It was very sweet.
Wow.
So maybe we should tip writers.
That should
tipping writers.
You should write this piece for Jacobin.
Okay.
On tipping writers.
Excellent.
I think I'm too far left for Jacobin.
All right. Yes, you are.
Yeah, they're squishy now compared to you.
So I wanted to let you guys know that I've made a few tweaks to my RG diet.
Oh.
Ooh. Yes. Ooh. So what happened was, and this is an interesting experiment. So what happened was I had the kids the other night because Kate was working. So I took them to, they all wanted to go, and I kind of really like as well, the Chinese restaurant in Arlington, Peter Chang's. But you know how it is with Chinese restaurants. My weight immediately goes up.
Not P.F. Chang's.
Not P.F. Chang's. Peter
Fitzgerald Chang's.
No. Different. That's a good one, though. I think the F is Fleming. I get mixed up.
It's not related to Fleming's.
There's a whole story to this, and I forget about it. But I wrote about it. Thank you. Look it up. In any event, so we went to Peter Chang's. But my concern is, you know, I'm going to get something really heavy because I can't resist like the beef chow fun or something that's really like with a lot of carbs and sodium, and then I pay the price the next few days.
Paul Fleming and Philip Chang.
Fleming, there you go.
Who is in fact, I'm sorry, the restaurateur Fleming's. Behind Fleming's.
Fleming's. That's right. Steakhouse. That's right. So our friend Dan Halper says, well, why don't you get like the hottest thing on the menu? Then you'll be less inclined to eat all of it. And his favorite dish, as is mine, I've had it with him rather, is the ghost pepper beef. So I said, sure, I'll get the ghost pepper beef. Now, as you know, ghost pepper is, I believe at the moment, the third hottest pepper, at least
in this
country.
Isn't that what they use in pepper spray?
No, it's close to. It can be used for that. I mean, it's not. It's
you can eat it or use it to defend yourself.
You know the Scoville scale. Yes, the Scoville scale.
Scovilles.
It scores about a million. So it's about 400 times hotter than a jalapeno.
I had friends in college who got really into the Scoville scale and would just go to like specialty stores and buy hot sauces, and then they would get toothpicks and they would like put the toothpicks in it and put it on their tongue. Just and that's all they would do with it.
Was this a hazing thing?
It's just what they. It's like instead of sitting around smoking weed, they would burn their tongues. And I did this a couple times. It was fun, I guess. But
well, the hottest one right now is the Carolina Reaper. So that is the hot. That's hot. And then there's a second one, and then ghost peppers. They're ghost peppers from India. So I get this dish, and it's just an appetizer dish. But sure enough, I picked that dish. I did not scarf it down. So it actually, where I sweated, I put my hand on my head, and I was sweating through my scalp. Like my hair was wet. And the kids thought it was funny. They're having like wonton soup and fried dumplings and stuff. So I said, you know what? I can't believe that. It felt like somebody sprayed mace in my mouth. But you know what? It was also flavorful. I paid for this $12. It was tasty.
You people are crazy.
The beef was tasty. It's a pleasure and pain. It's pleasure and pain. It's like, oh my gosh, it's so good. But oh my gosh, I'm in pain. Vic, Sonny,
when are we going to go to the hibachi?
Oh,
the hibachi.
Yeah, people
buffet.
Are wondering about that. What used to be the Hokkaido seafood buffet.
Hokkaido seafood.
The idea of a seafood buffet on the highway.
Route 7.
On
you're going to have to delete that.
That's how you pronounce it correctly. Okay. Yeah, we got to do that. Okay.
We got to go. Mm-hmm. We got to go. Mm-hmm. And JBL, do you want to come to the hibachi buffet?
Well, live tweet. I'm going
to
do a whole.
Oh, I'm invited to a place where you guys go out together.
Well, that sounds great.
But it doesn't sound. It's not the sort of place you would be comfortable. I think it's a Chinese buffet.
What's wrong with that?
Well, what would you eat there?
You want me to?
I don't have to eat. I can just hang out with you.
Oh,
you
want me to, that doesn't count.
No, you can't just come
That's the worst.
This is like what I would have done at Wine Week.
Yeah, exactly.
Had I been invited.
Exactly.
This is why
this is the problem with bringing you to these places is because you just sit there and you silently judge us. You don't act like you're judging us at the time.
Okay.
I will judge you out loud if you like.
So let me just say this, the pros and the cons of the ghost pepper diet. Okay, the pro is I was not hungry. Right until the next day. Also, the con side,
the RGP diet.
It was the next morning.
How's that a con?
It was twice. Yeah, well, that's true because
clears it out.
It clears it out.
It cleared you right on out. Did you put some chase it with kombucha?
Let me say, I was reminded of my German host mother. Who, when she the first
Scheiße.
Time?
This is Scheiße. Oh, and my pronunciations are bad.
Thank you. Yeah, that
you
was
can
very
make fun of
that
Germans.
Was very offensive. No, she told me the first time she tried Mexican food because she and her daughter had gone to the Southwest, and she said to me in German, "Es war wie Feuer," which means it was like fire. That's all she said. "Es war wie Feuer," and I thought about Frau Lambert's. The next morning,
ring of fire.
It was something else. It was something. You know, the Germans. She probably just had like Tostitos salsa. It was like, oh my gosh, they can't handle it. But for me, the ghost pepper really did a number twice, and so that's just the flip side. So on the other side, I kept my weight down, and on the con side, I turned into a human shotgun. Thank you. With armor piercing shells. But speaking of shotguns with armor piercing shells. Over the weekend, yes, thank you. John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum took the top spot at the box office with $57 million, followed by The Avengers Endgame with $30 million, and in third place, Pokemon Detective Pikachu with $25 million. Box office thoughts, Avengers finally toppled. What's going on?
Before we get to John Wick 3, I think it's worth noting that there's a chance. I don't know that it's a decent chance. It will depend on what happens with Aladdin, I guess. Ugh. But there's a chance that Avengers Endgame is not going to top Avatar at the worldwide box office, which is something I would not have predicted after it grossed $2 billion in 10 days. The repeat viewings are not there. I expected it to be very heavily front-loaded, obviously. It grossed $350 million on its opening weekend. I did not expect it to do a multiple of three and gross $1.1 billion, you know, at home.
No, that was huge.
But I am a little bit surprised that it is going to limp past Avatar if it makes there at all.
Question.
Yes.
Am I incorrect in believing that the audience goodwill towards Avengers Endgame far out weighs the audience goodwill towards Avatar? Did anybody actually like Avatar? I mean, I enjoyed Avatar as a viewing experience.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know anybody who thinks it's a good movie or has watched it since.
Agreed.
I mean, look, Avatar, I will defend Avatar as a movie that is perfectly appealing to a wide swath of people. It is designed to appeal to the widest swath of people possible. And as such, it accomplished the goal of being perfectly watchable and not terribly memorable, right? Like your question is, I think you're combining two different questions here. I think Avatar's cinema score was perfectly fine. I'll look it up here in a second.
No, I'm sure it was.
Was it?
And people went back to see it because it was like a thrill ride. I mean, it was an amazing visual experience.
And everybody wanted to go see it at least once because it was the first real 3D
IMAX 3D. And
yeah,
all
I mean,
that.
It got an A. It has an A from CinemaScore.
That people tend to seem to really like Avengers Endgame.
People,
and I don't know that people really liked. You know, they were happy to go see Avatar because it was like a thing
it's
to do.
Amazing.
But, do you see what I'm saying? Like,
Avatar. I mean, I don't know that it has that much to do with goodwill so much as other structural things, right? Like, Avatar came out in December. Avatar basically had three uncontested months as the, like, big action-adventure movie in theaters. You know, it was the... I remember its weekend-to-weekend drop. Its weekend-to-weekend drop was something like 2% from first weekend to second weekend. There was, like, a weird... This is one of these weird things that only I seem to remember. There was a giant snowstorm on the East Coast that weekend,
which
kept a lot of people in. So, like, part of that drop, again, there was a weird structural thing to it. But the point is, like, that movie held forever. It, like, kept playing and kept playing.
I mention this because it surprises me that Endgame has eroded like this.
It surprises me, too. I really think the three-hour running time, you know, 3.5 hours with commercials and trailers and credits and everything.
It's a big time investment.
Is keeping people from really wanting to go see it more than once. I do think that is the bigger problem for it than, like, will it have enough show times to make $300 million opening weekend? But I'm surprised. I'm surprised that it is not going to blow past Avatar. Mm. Like, $3 billion out of the question.
Okay.
Yeah.
So John Wick 3 Parabellum, I saw it in theaters.
John Wick 3 Parabellum, can we talk about John Wick box office for one second?
Yeah, sure.
What's fascinating to me is that the opening weekend on John Wick has doubled for each of the two sequels, right? So the first movie made $14 million, something like that. In its opening weekend, second movie made $28 million, or made $30 million, so like slightly more than doubled, and this one made $57 million, so slightly less than doubled. But basically, from the first film to this one, it has doubled and then doubled again.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
How did audiences find John Wick? Because the first one did not do very well in theaters, mm-hmm. and John Wick did not go on to Netflix or Amazon Prime.
Sure.
It was one of those movies where to see it on streaming, you had to purchase it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I find it. Mm-hmm. But this is like the classic home video.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. It is a very, very rare thing these days. The first John Wick had kind of an interesting story. It was independently financed. The studio that was going to distribute it, I believe, dropped it like a month or two ahead of distribution, and Lionsgate just picked it up, like paid $5 million for it or something like that, and picked it up and put it in theaters. And it did fine. It grossed enough. It grossed enough to not be a money loser, but it was huge on home video. People loved it. It got great reviews, and the people who loved it evangelized. So once it hit Blu-ray and DVD and VOD and stuff, it did huge numbers, which made a second one feasible.
It is interesting to me that you can still do home video numbers by purchase and not by giving away to a streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is not the conventional wisdom. The conventional wisdom is if you want it to be seen once you go to home video, you have to give it away on either Netflix or Prime.
So I when I interviewed the the guy who runs Cinestate, which is the company that puts out Bone Tomahawk and Dragged Across Concrete, Dallas Sanye is his name. He actually, we talked about this, the economics of this a lot, and he was like, "Look, we make a very little bit of money in theaters. We basically four wall, and we make a little bit of money there. But when we do that, we can then put the movies on the VOD section that is in theaters now, and that with that they can add like a $2 or $3 premium to each stream." And so they make most of their money from that stream and also from DVD and Blu-ray sales at like Walmart. Apparently, like Walmart is still a huge mover of product. So if you have a movie with a star in it, a guy like Vince Vaughn or a guy like Mel Gibson who appeals to, say, red state audiences, you can throw that movie on the shelves at Walmart, and it is enough to move product. Once you get to Amazon Prime or Netflix, he said, look, it does three things basically. One, you get one last big infusion of cash. You get a couple million bucks. Two, but two is that's the end of the revenue stream, right? Essentially, mm-hmm. for that movie. Right. That's it. Once it's on Prime or Netflix, that's basically it. But three, what it does is it serves as an advertisement for the next movie that you're making. So like when you have a movie like Dragged Across Concrete, you know, you say like, okay, starring Mel Gibson and Vince Vaughn from the guys who made Bone Tomahawk, which people, you know, see on Amazon Prime, they watch and they're like, oh, that's pretty great. It's another one of...
Yeah, it's interesting.
So yep. it is fascinating. Streaming is basically the end of the revenue stream. But it is also a useful advertisement.
Interesting. Thank you, Sonny. That was all very interesting. Thank you. Did you see it in a screening, John Wick, or you went to...
I saw it at a screening.
Okay, yeah. I saw it in the theater, JVL.
I saw it in the theater, too.
Hey!
Did anyone else see it?
There's nothing light about this one. No. So, you know, there was a rumor that...
Who let the dogs out?
Oh, my gosh. No, there was a rumor.
Come on!
Hey, that was good. Yeah, I was going to say, there was a rumor that Gene had actually seen Detective Pikachu, but the time has passed.
I'd squirtle all over her Jigglypuffs,
but nobody gets that anymore. No, nobody gets that. It was strictly, you have to know your
God. Why?
Talk about Snorlax.
Okay, so.
Why is this happening
Sonny,
to us?
Sonny, how about a big boy review of John Wick 3?
John Wick 3 is the third film in the John Wick series. It is, so if longtime viewers of the series will remember that the first John Wick had a story that was so simple you could basically explain it via haiku. I will not recite the haiku here, but it's basically
what
about
was the haiku? Was it?
I wrote a haiku in my John Wick 3 review, but I'm not gonna read it here.
Oh, come on!
No,
don't make
people,
me pull.
People can.
You know
people can
I
go,
will pull it up and then I will.
So
read it
literally, what is it? 575?
575. Yeah. So John Wick was so simple you could explain it very briefly. It's about a man whose dog was killed and car was stolen. The dog was the gift of his dead wife. He wanted revenge for it. He is the greatest killer in the world. He's retired, but he's coming out of retirement for this. Second movie basically took that concept and expanded upon it, built this whole world out of, you know, you had the killers and their hotels and the high table and blah, blah, blah. And at the end of that film, John Wick breaks the rules of this world that he lives in. He kills a man in the Continental Hotel, right? So the third one picks up right where that leaves off. And... it is again kind of expansive in this world building idea. We see the orphanage that John Wick grew up in, the Belarusian ballet theater / assassin training ground. We travel to Morocco where we meet Sophia, played by Halle Berry, who has some war dogs, which is probably my favorite part of the film. And you know, moving all around, the point is John Wick wants to get out of this life. He wants to save his own life. So the question is, how does he do that? And all of this is wrapped up in some of the best action sequences that have been made by American filmmakers, period. You get fights in all sorts of weird, fun places, like for instance, a library, fight in a library. Never thought I'd see that. Here it is. It's great. Like I said, there's a big sequence where John Wick and Sophia are fighting with these dogs against these Moroccan killers, And it just is, it's fantastic. I love these dumb movies so much that I have like spent hours intellectualizing them and why I think that they are successful films. And I think that what it comes down to is John Wick, as embodied by Keanu Reeves, is a modern myth. And you see a lot of little hints about this kind of scattered throughout the films themselves. For instance, the concierge of the Continental Hotel, his name is Charon, which is the ferryman on the River Styx. His wife's name is Helen. Obvious resonance is there. The deaf woman that he fights in John Wick 3 is named Ares. You know, there's a lot of like different little things, and there's also tons of religious iconography in these films. For instance, in John Wick 3, his passage to Casablanca is what? It's a crucifix.
I was just waiting to see if you could come up with the name for what that what that object is.
Yeah. Well, I was.
It's a rosary.
Well, but it's a Russian Orthodox.
But I was going to ask: is it an Orthodox cross? Because it's not technically an Orthodox cross, right? Isn't that slightly different?
It's just a highly stylized Byzantine rosary. Okay. Rosary that they take
the Orthodox cross would have. They take the crucifix off of,
and they also burn him. The cross is upside down. Is that right? Which also jumped out at me.
Well, and he has a cross tattoo across his back, yes, right? As all of the people would see, as all the ballet dancers also have.
And this is also the whole film series is kind of this meditation on John Wick as God's wrath. Like Vigo in the first film, the Russian mobster is
Eastern
like,
Promises. Oh, you're talking about
Vigo Mortensen. The guy played by Michael Nyquist.
Got it.
He has this whole soliloquy about how John Wick is God's wrath brought upon him, and the reason he can't get out of this life is because he has a purpose. His purpose is to do terrible things to people. So anyway, I love these movies. I think they're great. I don't know. What do you guys
think? Thank you. Oh, GV, I was going to say two observations of the John Wick universe. One is, you know, it's almost always raining in this universe. It's a lot of rain. And then the other interesting thing is in the traffic, the city scenes, there's a lot of traffic. So much traffic. If there's only way to beat the traffic, JVL.
We have a new sponsor this week, a company called Boosted Boards. And we actually, before sitting down to tape, we took our Boosted board out of the package and we have it in and charging. And next week, we will be happy to tell you all about the hijinks we get into, Marty McFly style. With it, it's super cool. Incredibly, I would say, it's a very well-made object. It's like heavy. Everything about this thing radiates quality. But let me tell you about Boosted Boards. Instead of sitting in traffic, searching for parking, or smelling your seatmate's sandwich on the bus, imagine riding the streets, wind in your hair, on your own Boosted electric vehicle. Time spent in traffic is time not spent exploring, creating, and having fun. Use Boosted to get where you need to be faster. Getting from point A to point B means spending more time waiting than moving. If you're sick of waiting to get where you're going, let Boosted give you a lift. Boosted's vehicle-grade electric skateboards and scooters are the modern solution to your transportation woes. With a 22-mile range and max speeds of 24 miles per hour, Boosted is perfect for both running to the store and traveling across town. Designed to provide a luxurious experience, it's no wonder that Boosted was one of Time Magazine's best inventions of 2018. With five options to pick from, including their new scooter, the Boosted Rev, there's a personal electric vehicle that's tailor-made for you. Starting at $61 a month with financing, there's no better time to change how you move than now. Right now, Boosted is offering our listeners $75 off the purchase of an electric vehicle when you use the code BEACON at checkout. So you go to boostedboards.com and use the code BEACON at checkout to get $75 off your vehicle. That's boostedboards.com. The promo code is BEACON at checkout for $75 off. We're going to have a lot of fun with this thing, boys.
It's going to be great on bloopers and practical jokes.
No. And by we, I mean we're going to make the young people in the office
We have a lot of volunteers. There's a lot of people in our office very, very excited to want to give this a try.
Yeah, when I took it out at home, my kids were like, they were super into it. So I can't wait.
Thank you, JVL.
One last thing. So one of the reasons I do like these films is because they seem to be, again, escalating the moral stakes here. I mean, the first film is very much about this question of justice. Does justice exist? Is this a thing that can be achieved? And the second one kind of looks more inward, right? It's about John Wick trying to change, trying to prove he can change. And this is all spelled out very early on in the film when... what's his name? Peter Stormare says, you know, can a man like you know peace? John Wick says, why not? As if it's a simple question. But the reason he can't is because of what he is. He is not just a killer. He's the best killer. Like, that is what he is. It's his whole identity. And this film is kind of, this film is about whether or not you can overturn the natural order that demands a man like him has to fit in a certain peg. And I know that it is easy to just kind of watch these films and enjoy the action and then let it all wash over you. But I do think that there is the reason that it sticks with people is because there is something slightly more to it that they pick up on at the very least on a kind of subconscious level.
JVL, what did you think?
Why are you blinking at me?
The air is dry. What's happening? The air gets dry.
You're doing
in studio.
Your Arch Campbell blinking.
Next.
Man's pooch slain, car pinched. He springs vengeance on culprits. Dog was dead wife's gift. No, Vic.
Thank you.
That was Sonny's haiku.
That was my haiku. I'm now a published poet. Me and Micah Maddox.
You are.
You know, it's funny. I have a very different takeaway from the first John Wick, which I believe is, like you, a movie about ideas. But the idea I think it has is about duty, not justice. Mm-hmm. Because the central conflict of it is not John Wick avenging his wife. The central conflict is Michael Nyquist's character, who has this degenerate son who he hates and who he knows is in the wrong, who has wronged John Wick. He likes John better than he likes his son, and yet he is duty bound to stand up for his son because his son is his son, mm-hmm. which is a fantastic sure. conflict, right? I mean, this is a question yep. of what is his duty in this terrible situation? And this, you know, it's obvious what John has to do because John is avenging his dog and reclaiming his life and all that. But it's all about what does Viggo have to do? Because Viggo could have just turned his son over. He hates his son. It wouldn't have been mm-hmm. hard. So I saw it that way. I liked it. I didn't love it. It's not as good as the first John Wick.
Did you like the second one?
Like, yeah, I did. Nothing is as good as the first, mm-hmm. the first one, because they're not doing different things. Mm-hmm. I think. I mean, it is all sort of meditations on a theme, which is fine with me. I don't dislike that.
It's funny. I don't remember the second one anymore. It sort of blurs. I mean, I remember the first one because he was a normal guy, but. I love this movie a lot, even though the ending I thought was a bit of a stretch, but lots of shooting, lots of killing, A++. That's what I say. But no, I saw this movie and...
Swords through the head?
So, How about the knife through the eyeball?
That was a bit... I was like actually kind of surprised they went there with that.
I couldn't believe it. I actually stared at it. I was like, how are they going to... Well, I mean, the wonders of CGI now, but, wow.
The action scenes in this film are interesting because it does really feel like one of the... Chad Stahelski, who is the director and who was a stunt guy on the Matrix movies. Ah, like that's how he knows Keanu. It's one of the few movies that really feels like it understands how guns work. So it's not just there's a weight to guns that a lot of people don't appreciate if you're not around them. And the way that John Wick uses them as bludgeons in certain of these fight scenes and the way he uses them to kind of surprise people is always interesting to me. There's this great shot early in John Wick 3 where he literally he grabs a gun and tries to put a round in it and the caliber doesn't fit. So he takes apart a different gun and takes apart that gun and puts another one together. And it is like it is total gun porn. It is the sort yep. of thing that like you if you don't understand what he's doing, I can't imagine it makes sense to people. But it is a very interesting insight into what they're actually doing here, which is trying to make this. They have this hyper stylized, absurd universe in which guns actually work like they work in the real world, which is fascinating. I mean, like, also this shootout at the end with the body armor guys, where John Wick has to, like, shoot each of them in the back of the neck to get them to go inside, down before he goes and gets the armor-piercing shotgun rounds, is another just, like, fascinating little point. You don't think that there's an interesting thing going on in this third one about the idea of where power comes from? I mean, like, John Wick's power comes from himself, right? As I said in my review, he is like a modern exemplar of arete, right? He is like the Greek, he's the personification of like Greek excellence and the idea that that excellence is in itself a virtue. And so he thinks it exempts him from this whole system. But what Winston understands is that there is no exemption from the system. The reason that Winston turns on him in that last minute is because he knows that his power flows from the system. The Continental Hotel only works because of the rules. And the rules only work because you have a higher authority giving them down.
Does he turn on him, or is he firing like bullets, like blanks, or is he shooting at none?
He shoots him off the roof.
How does he survive that? That's impossible.
How did Lawrence Fishburne survive?
Well, we don't see how deep the cut. We saw a lot of blood. But
seven cuts.
You are cut across the abdomen with a samurai sword, or not a samurai,
katana,
it's a ninja,
or
it's
something.
It's a ninja short sword.
Yes.
Your intestines would be on the ground.
And I heard that. You hear the sound effect of the blood splatter. But maybe he shot him in places that, you know, they're non-lethally. I don't know.
Like the
non-vital
organs. One of my
organs.
Favorites.
Great.
One of my
that was
favorite
a great opening.
Signs. Is, you know, shoot right here. Float.
That's exactly
you know what? One may not be enough.
Do it in the cup. Avoid the cup. You know what? It's very quick. And I thought, okay, did he do something like that? Or did he really turn? And again, so two things. He really turns on him. Okay. But, okay, he got shot several times and falls off a building and survives.
That was too much for you.
That was too much for me. Otherwise, I thought he can get away. So I'd like to think that he was, you know, he went soft on him somehow.
So you know what? My big complaint with the third movie, and again, I liked it fine. I actually had a great time. I went out with my sister. My sister and I haven't gone to a movie together in a theater in forever. The big complaint was the act. One of the joys of the John Wick movies is getting truly great character actors in small parts. Mm-hmm. Like Michael Nyquist, who was in a small part, a big part. Like Peter Stormare. You know, you get these great guys who show up and give you 5 minutes of work or 10 minutes of work. And here, instead of that, we get Halle Berry, who is not a good actress.
What?
How dare you?
Monsters
and,
Ball.
And
you
the nullity who plays... the adjudicator who just, you know what, I looked at that and I just thought, could I please not have Elizabeth Debicki in this role?
Yeah.
Like, give me like a
have
real
we
actress
seen her before somewhere?
Role.
I wondered
she
if
was
we
on
did.
Orange and the she New was, Black.
Oh, that was it?
And I would say even actors I love, like Larry Fishburne and Angelica Houston, don't really, they're not,
you didn't
I would
like
say
the
they're
sushi
restrained.
Chef? Mark Damascos.
Mark Dacascos.
Isn't he
great.
A chef? Isn't he from
Iron
Chef?
He was the host
something?
Of Iron
he's
Chef.
He's the host of Iron Chef, yeah.
He was the host of Iron Chef, but he's also a martial arts expert, and he's part...
You don't like him? I thought he was delightfully goofy.
I thought he was great. Okay.
He was Braun.
Doing a thing.
Braun from Game of Thrones. The guy in
Morocco.
The guy
I loved him.
So he was okay. Yeah. He was okay, and the Iron Chef guy was okay. At least he had like an idea behind what he was doing.
Also, the guys in The Raid. Have you guys seen The Raid? The Raid Redemption.
No, I have
so
not.
Those two Thai guys at the end who John Wick says
right.
be seeing you be to seeing you. At the end, those guys are from The Raid, which is like the ne plus ultra of martial arts.
Yeah,
films.
No,
they were good. Well, they're the real deal.
I was disappointed in Halle Berry and Larry Fishburne's term and the adjudicator girl. Just, you have Lance Reddick doing such great work in everything. Every scene he's in, I could have used a little bit more. I really love the hyper-stylized world that they live in. So when they go to... My favorite stuff was the glimpse of... I don't even know what they call it. But the room where all the suicide girls dressed up as like 50
the
secretaries.
Switchboard.
The switchboard. Yeah. And they have rotary phones... they're using like
typewriters,
IBM computers with a like a, the green screens. Yeah, yeah. And there's even one of those ticker tapes under a glass ball. Like everything about that is
love all that stuff.
Is
love
just all that stuff. Interesting and cool and I don't know.
Do the people in this world, I mean, it's supposed to be our world, right? And this is Earth. This is New York. But at the same time, there's killing in Grand Central
anymore.
Station.
Not anymore.
And nobody's noticing it.
Friend of the show, Andy Levy. And this is something I actually thought as I was sitting there in the theater. You remember the scene where Winston is talking to John Wick and they're in the like fancy office lounge, whatever. Mm-hmm. And Winston is basically telling John Wick what his place in this world is. I was like, this is the architect scene from Matrix Reloaded,
yes.
Except it doesn't suck. And I was thinking that, and I emailed our friend Andy about this, and he emails back, and he tweeted this later, so I'm not stealing anything from him. Like, I just assume all of these movies are stealth sequels to The Matrix, where the computers realize that everybody just wants to be an assassin, and they're playing a real-life video game. And that's why you have
a total feel of it.
That's why everybody on the street is a killer. That's why Ian McShane, who I would assume is some sort of program in this new Matrix, can get everybody to stop on a dime.
Homeless, everybody.
Everybody is a killer.
The Bowery.
So the first movie posits that we live in the real world and there is this tiny little subworld operating in a corner that we don't see. And by John Wick 3, it's more like Men in Black. Like, actually, this whole other world is the real world, and we're the ones, the normies are the ones who are somehow oblivious to the real action going on. Who do these assassins in this world kill other than other assassins?
I don't know. That's a good
like,
question.
Like, do they ever go after...
And they seem to always be going after other assassins.
Right. Remember, in the second in the second one, the guy who runs the Continental's like, you're not here for the Pope, are you?
Right, the whole, you know, with this many master assassins running around the world, people must be murdered... Like, every single day. Like, you know, head of state can last more than...
Right. Busloads of assassins come to the hotel.
I did love seeing real-life modern ninjas.
Oh, okay.
Did you like the ninjas?
Yeah.
The guys just appearing out of the shadows.
Yeah.
Those guys were great. DeCascos, again, I like him a lot. He's part Filipino, so I felt like I can relate to him when I watched him do his moves, you know? But I would say, despite my little
Favorite kill, go.
Oh, my gosh.
Horse kick.
Horse kick was great. Horse kicks.
Knife fight.
Because that happens. The knife, I thought what was so amazing is, and you give us so much credit for the other stunt guys, to throw the knife and having the blunt sides hit him on the back. And Keanu talks about the art of knife throwing, right? And he's talking about, we were in that interview, and he says, you know, more often than not, you know, it's not the sharp blade that, you know, gets you, especially if it spins. And so they're throwing it. Unless it's all CGI'd, but they're throwing it where, you know, the blunt side, there's an art to it, and you can do it that way. And then he's throwing it, the less spin, the better it's supposed to be. I appreciated that right until the knife in the eyeball. But
that was surprising.
That was surprising. But all I can think of was my dad is currently on vacation, but I can't wait for him to come back because I have to tell him this is the quintessential Dr. Mattis movie. It's like when he sees it, it's going to be like Citizen Kane and Gone with the Wind into one. Oh, my gosh. It's everything. I mean, there's all sorts of weapons and things. I mean, it's amazing. So I found myself sometimes making noises out loud in the theater. I was so amused.
It does feel like a big budget stylized 1980s action ninja movie in places.
Was The Man Above the High Table too young for you? I was really sort of caught off guard, but I just needed
in the
like
desert?
A super, yeah, I needed an old dude
me
there.
Too.
And having
me
a
too.
Guy who's like younger than John.
Me too.
Blake
I don't know what's
like,
going on there.
It's Prince of Persia, man. How did you become?
So I think that this scene was kind of necessary for the, again, there's a whole kind of mythical subcurrent to the films. So this idea of John Wick going into the desert and going past the limits of human endurance to learn of a secret truth, you know, like what it's very like monomyth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so it felt like an unnecessary indulgence. We'll see what they do with it in the next film because there's going to be another one.
There's also a greenlit based on the numbers. I would also say the end of the of John Wick 3 is a great homage to Bruce Lee in Enter the Dragon when Bruce Lee faces Han in the Hall of Mirrors. And so in order to find with a real one, I mean, you're just, you know, going back and forth versus the reflections. And then he basically, Bruce Lee has to break all the mirrors to find where he really is. And something similar happens here. And I thought that was great.
Well, they did that better in the second one, though.
I have one other thing that I bet you guys did not notice. You mentioned that there was gun porn. Mm. There's an awful lot of watch porn in this thing, too.
Oh, really?
Did you notice that? Up in the administrative lounge, one of the giant video screens is
I actually noticed that, and I thought to myself, will JVL know what those watches are?
Carl F. Bucherer.
Yeah,
Bucherer. It is a Swiss watch. So both... both the Bowery character, Sophia, and John Wick are all wearing Bucherer. And Wick keeps looking at his. You get a good look at his. And he's wearing the Bucherer auto date. These are very...
We're getting into watch.
These are very achievable watches.
How much
you could get...
Question.
Yes.
How much does John Wick's watch cost?
You could get it for like $2,500.
Totally cheap.
Totally a very reachable timepiece. Okay.
JVL, can I tell you really quickly? I promise this is really quick. I actually went to the Bucherer store in Lucerne, Switzerland.
You did?
Yes, when I was in high school. And you know what I bought? A Swatch.
It was so cool. It was like black and gray.
What an awesome choice.
Thank you,
Sonny. Do you still have it? I bet it still works.
This was 1988 Swatch at its height. JVL, look at JVL's face.
JVL is displeased.
Let me say this. So wrap things up here. I liked.
Did you take a dump on the middle of the store while you were there?
Right on the glass counter.
Right on top of the Piaget display.
Hey, let me. You want me to pay for it? Here's a little something else in payment
for your Bauman Mercier. Okay. I liked the movie again. But I would say don't watch it on an empty stomach. It's more than 2 hours long.
Yes.
I think so. By the time this was done, I was starving and I didn't feel like cooking. Sound familiar? With DoorDash, you don't need to get up and to get a good meal cooking. DoorDash connects you to all of your favorite restaurants in your city. Ordering is easy. Just use the DoorDash app and choose what you want to eat, and your Dasher will bring it right to you wherever you are. Not only is that burger place you love on DoorDash already, like Five Guys, but over 310,000 other amazing restaurants are, too. DoorDash connects you with door-to-door delivery in over 3,300 cities and all 50 states across the United States and Canada. Order from your local go-tos or choose from your favorite chains like Chipotle, Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, the Cheesecake Factory. Don't worry about dinner. Let dinner come to you with DoorDash. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code SUBBEACON. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter promo code SUBBEACON. Again, that's promo code SUBBEACON for $5 off your first order from DoorDash. SUBBEACON. Corrections, additions, shout-outs. We're good. Wonderful. That's all the time we are giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments. Tweet us at Victorino Mattis, at Sonny Bunch.
You can send us tips, too, if you want.
Send us tips.
What do you think the booze that people send you people all the time is?
It's a good point. Good point.
Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play. Just type in SUBBEACON on a podcast. We're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time. So, everything good?
I have a little something for you, boys.
Please. What do you got?
On Sunday, in our travel team doubleheader.
Oh, yes.
Flash pitched an immaculate inning.
Oh, details.
Do you know what an immaculate inning is?
It's like a perfect game, but in an inning.
It is 9 pitches, 3 Ks.
9 pitches, 9 strikes.
9 pitches, 9 strikes.
What's the 3 Ks?
3 strikeouts.
A K is a strikeout.
Yes.
Playing the second best team in the league, he just dismantled these kids. Wow. And that inning was unlike, I mean, just... He was owning the outside of the plate and the high part of the strike zone, and he just kept pounding them. The kids couldn't catch up to it. It was awesome. And I did a little deep dive. He has pitched now 12 innings with the Travel League. Would you care to guess how many strikeouts he's got in 12 innings, Sonny? I won't ask Vic because Vic
I'm not sure what's happening
here. I'm sorry, how many innings?
12 innings.
24.
33.
Wow,
look at that.
So only 3 outs have not been recorded by strikeout. in his good. Four starts now for for
that's
the team.
Insane.
It's really, it's pretty
that's
great.
Fantastic.
So he's on the other hand, his little league team, not so good.
The travel team.
The travel team's doing great. His little league team for the last two games, Flash has gone 2-for-2 in both games and had the only two hits for the team. And like afterwards, he's a little down. And I said, you know, buddy, look, you're going to lose 100% of the games where you're the only kid on the team who gets a hit. Yeah,
that's right.
Like this is and he's like, okay, it doesn't matter. I'm having fun. Right. I'm having fun. That's all I've got. What do you got?
Oh, just really quickly, a heads up for Sonny. I did bring leftovers for my lunch today, so I'm having the ghost pepper beef. So if you need to use the men's room.
Are you going to go down a floor?
No, I'm not gonna, I might not make it that. It happened so fast. So, Sonny, if you need to use the men's room, go now.
Ugh, that's not fine.